Welcome to Tashma, the podcast where you get to listen in on Hadar's Beit Midrash. This year, each week, we will hear a Devar Torah on the Parsha from Rabbi David Kasher. Let's listen.
By the time we arrive at Parshat Toldot and come upon two brothers vying for the mantle of family leadership, we can already predict with some confidence that it is the younger brother who will prevail. For one thing, we were listening in when that fate was made nearly explicit at the opening of the Parsha, as God told Rebekah that two peoples were growing in her womb, but that the older shall serve the younger. Isaac will remain unaware of this message, but we have taken note of it. But even without eavesdropping on this prophecy, if we've been reading Genesis carefully so far, we know, in this book, when brothers are in competition, the firstborn never wins. We've already seen Abel's offering chosen by God over his older brother Cain's, and then we witnessed Ishmael cast out of Abraham's family so that, as Sarah says, the son of that slave woman will not inherit with my son Isaac. On that precedent alone, we might well suspect that the fix is in for elder brother Esau. There are also some clues in the Torah's language that support this hypothesis. If we trace the use of the word for firstborn, bechor, from the beginning of the book, we notice a pattern of failure. The first usage comes early on in Genesis, fittingly in the story of Cain and Abel. A quick read-through might miss it because the term is used to describe not Cain's status as the firstborn, but instead the choicest, bechorot, literally the first issue of Abel's flock. There's just a subtle hint there in the midst of the first sibling rivalry, a nod to the word which will become so pivotal to all subsequent such rivalries. But already it is Abel, the younger child, who has a hold of the firstborn. Cain cuts Abel's ascent short with violence, as Esau will one day threaten to do to Jacob. But in the end, Cain remains cursed, more cursed than the ground. The next two usages of the term bechor will continue to create ominous associations. The firstborn of the accursed Canaan, and the firstborn of Abraham's brother Nahor, Uz, whose name will appear again in the setting for the Job story. Cain, Canaan, Job, all doomed figures. So by the time Ishmael is finally called Abraham's firstborn, just a few verses before Parshat Toldot begins, but long after having been supplanted by Isaac as the primary inheritor, we are coming to understand that in this book, the firstborn child is not the most likely to succeed. With all of this in mind, when we come to the first recorded dialogue between the twin brothers and find it centered around a negotiation of over the bechorah, the birthright of the firstborn, we can guess how things will end. Note how strongly the word is emphasized throughout the scene, recurring once in each of four successive verses. Jacob seeks to purchase the birthright from Esau for a pot of stew. It seems like a bad deal for Esau, but he's amenable, saying, "Lamazeli bechora, of what use to me is a birthright?" So Jacob has Esau swear on it, and he sold his birthright. When we're finally told that Esau spurned the birthright, the logic clicks right into place for us. The pattern continues. The firstborn is out. Jacob will surely inherit the covenant. This time, however, there is a twist. This rivalry is not quite over. The sale of the birthright turns out to be just a prelude to the main event of this parsha, which begins in chapter 27. Jacob deceiving his aging and nearly blind father by dressing up as Esau in order to take from him a blessing meant for Esau. We had been told that Isaac favored Esau over Jacob. Isaac loved Esau for he was a hunter. Now Isaac is calling upon the skill he admired, asking Esau to hunt me something and make it into food I love so that I can bless you before I die. But Rebekah, perhaps with the message from God in mind, launches into a plan to send Jacob in first with food, dressed as Esau, in order to fool Isaac into blessing Jacob instead. This climactic drama, then, is a struggle not for birthright, bechorah, but for blessing, bracha. And it is the root for blessing, beit resh kaf, that will serve as the key word in this narrative, appearing no fewer than 23 times in the course of chapter 27. Yet the other root, Beit Kafresh has not been forgotten. In fact, the chapter has begun to weave the two together. As we see in the pivotal moment when Jacob carries out his deception with one word in order to secure the other, saying, I am Esau, your firstborn, Bechorcha, and I have done as you have told me. Please sit up and eat what I have caught so that you may bless me, Tevarcheni. As the significance of birthright and blessing in these successive Esau and Jacob narratives becomes difficult to distinguish, perhaps we will notice that the Hebrew words for the two concepts, bracha and bechora, are themselves almost identical. Anagrams, with the same outer letters, but with the inner letters flipped. The composition of these two words then parallels the twin siblings themselves, formed from the same genetic material, similar enough for one to pose as the other, but not quite identical. Just as we are beginning to catch on to the narrative device of interweaving these two fraternal twin words, we are unexpectedly joined by a character in the story itself, who also seems to pick up on the Torah's signals. Esau, of all people, when he realizes that he has lost the blessing meant for him, suddenly makes the connection between the two scenes and their two key words. Vayomer, hachi krashmo Yaakov, and he said, that is why he was called Jacob, because he has grabbed away from me two times. He took my birthright, Bechori, and see now, he has taken my blessing, Birchati. It is as if Esau, mostly clueless up to this point, has suddenly stepped slightly outside the narrative and is able to look back at his own story with the eyes of a reader, to see all kinds of linguistic clues and, in case we had missed them, to draw the connections for us. The Zohar picks up on Esau's moment of awakening and, in a finely nuanced reading, reads another layer of meaning into his exclamation. He has grabbed away this from me two times. Why say this, zeh? It should have just said, he has grabbed away from me two times. But it is really one word that has been used twice. It was my birthright, bechorati, and then it came back again as my blessing, birchati. This one thing used in two ways. The two key words we've been considering, bechora and bracha, are actually, in this reading, one word with slight changes in form. The Zohar's mystical orientation allows for words themselves to be animated, to reconstitute themselves and reappear. But this is also a symbolic way of saying that the two scenes and two concepts we have been considering are all manifestations of one underlying concern. We've been trying to figure out who will inherit this covenant. We took notice as the Torah slowly undermined the institution of the firstborn's birthright as a formal claim. In Parshat Toldot, we come to better understand what is being inherited. Inheritance in this covenant is not a claim to property or title. It is the passing on of a blessing that God gave to Abraham in their first encounter. Ve'yeh bracha, you will be a blessing. That is why our Parsha closes with Isaac calling upon God to give Jacob Birkat Avraham, the blessing of Abraham. The roles of birthright and blessing have been difficult to disentangle in this narrative, but learning to distinguish between them provides us with a deeper insight into the nature of the covenant we've inherited. This is not a legacy meant to secure wealth and power, but to bestow divine favor. God's blessing is not automatically acquired through birth order or social status, but has the potential to cut through traditional hierarchies, to favor the younger child, the underdog, the unlikely hero. As Genesis moves us from birthright to blessing, the change in the order of letters reminds us that the family order and the world order can always be overturned. Thanks for listening. I wanted to let you know that I'm teaching an online Parsha class every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, in partnership with Ikar. We'll take a deeper dive into some aspect of the material we covered in this Dvar Torah. So if you love these podcasts, it's a great way to keep the conversation going. Sign up for free at hadar.org/west.
Our producers for this episode are Sam Greenberg and Jeremy Tabak. Thank you to Nadav Remez for editing this episode. I'm your host, Rabbi Avi Killip. It's been a pleasure to learn with you.